Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we shine light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address real problems rather than just defend positions. Well, with the COVID lockdown and many businesses closed, there actually this year has been talk about guaranteed income, a way to counteract the trickle-down economics with some bubble-up payments from the bottom that bubble up and prosper everyone on their way up. Well, unfortunately, the only guaranteed income we have right now is going to Wall Street, not Main Street. For decades, conscientious folks looking to secure a reasonably prosperous retirement have followed the dictates of Wall Street and financial advisors who've steered them to funds that unfortunately have enriched the already high-paid executives and impoverished middle-class Americans. This week on Wiki Politiki, we're going to go deeper into that story and, more importantly, show you ways that you can guarantee your retirement income. Our guest this week, Barry Dyke, is a financial advisor and author whose three books and a new one coming shed light and enlightenment on the darkened spaces of retirement investing. Barry James Dyke is a best-selling author, advisor, and speaker committed to telling the truth about how Wall Street really works. He believes that today's financial service and retirement planning systems continue to serve Wall Street, the government, the media, Ivy League academia, than giant asset managers such as mutual funds, more than the common individual. Barry, with his advisory firm Castle Asset Management, LLC, has made a spiritual, intellectual, and professional commitment to act as an economic warrior that looks out for your best interests, not Wall Street. He's the author of The Pirates of Manhattan and the sequel, The Pirates of Manhattan 2, Highway to Serfdom, or as the Swami would say, Surf City, here we come. And his latest book, Guaranteed Income, A Risk-Free Guide to Retirement. A book that unveils and documents how the Federal Reserve System, major banks and corporations such as General Motors, Verizon, AT&T, Bank of America, Boeing, Coca-Cola, Bell System, et cetera, use life insurance and annuity products to finance their corporate and executive retirement programs, while most Americans remain at risk in their 401k programs funded with really highly speculative, actively traded mutual funds. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Welcome, Barry.
Steve, thank you so much for having me. And hello to all your listeners out there in Berkeley. I have very many fond memories out there years ago.
Well, good. Yeah, we're certainly berserk at the top of the hill here in Berkeley and in the Bay Area, getting over the smoke and so on. I mean the fire smoke, not the other smoke.
Yeah.
No, good. Your first book is called The Pirates of Manhattan. That's a pretty provocative title. Tell us about the book and how it came about.
Well, it came about, you know, I've been a financial advisor, Steve, gee whiz, for 35, almost 40 years now, and it was kind of a reinvention of myself. I had owned a pension consulting business. I had owned a third-party administration firm. I'd done, a lot of, I've been very successful at what I went through, and I went through a horrific divorce, but in any event, I had to reinvent myself, and I really realize that that a lot of the financial products sold by Wall Street, i.e. mutual funds, which are funding virtually all your 401k plans and your, or if you're in the nonprofit, like 403b plans, which is essentially the same, were rigged. And it's a story, I'm sticking to it. And so in any event, so I realized a lot of this stuff, because Steve, no one knows what the future is going to be. I don't even know what I'm having for dinner tonight, never mind what's going to happen next week or next year from now. So the whole idea that these institutions or asset managers could predict the future, to me, it was at very best a good guess, but at worst, just in total miscommunication. So I understood a lot of the stuff just didn't work. And but I did know, because I'd been selling all these products and things like that for years, and I owned a pension consulting business too, and I still do pension consulting to this day, but I realized that some of the products offered from insurance companies and so forth did work. And but the aha moment, Steve, is when I was able to make friends with a woman from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and around 2005, 2006, which helped me go through the FDIC files, and I did a lot of investigation. So I found out what Wall Street does for itself and what they're doing for regular investors is complete hypocrisy. So I realized that the way things are invested today are very, very unstable. And today, I hate to say it, it's much worse than it was in 2007 when I came out with this first book. But I realized that the only people who really benefit in all this whole money system, if you will, are, you know, the bankers, Wall Street, asset managers, insiders, whether it be people from Facebook or any of these gigantic companies. And all the risk has been transferred, Steve, onto the retail investor who doesn't have a clue. And so I thought this was important to people to know. And that's how the book. The book took off, and I explained why the system was really essentially unstable. And then we had the financial crisis in 2008. So I looked like a not a Swami, but like a Notre Dame of sorts. And I said, no, I'm not that smart. I'm just a good researcher. And then we had the collapse, and so people who had followed some of my advice had virtually no losses, but it's gotten much worse, unfortunately, and it's very, 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 very difficult getting the truth out. So I'm most grateful for you having me as your guest.
Well, you know, what happened in 2008, and actually it began happening in 2000, you know, when the dot-coms began to go bust. Yep. And so on. A lot of people who thought that they were very well set, they had their money in stocks, they had their 401ks and all of that. All of a sudden, you know, how can you're looking at the future as your retirement? This is what you've been saving for. You've been putting money aside every month. You've had it taken out. You've been very conscientious about all of this, and in spite of being that conscientious, all of a sudden, there are people who thought they had pension funds and don't have them. How can something like that happen when people have been told that these are stable? These are stable.
It's BS. And the thing is they're not stable. And this is the whole thing, Steve. It's kind of the story is all the story of man, but it's really about use and exploitation of other people's money. And mm-hmm. And this is what we're seeing with the 401ks, and then also to a large degree the pension funds, which are kind of, unfortunately, they're the biggest pikers. You know, and you're in California, and I've done a lot of research on CalPERS and CalSTRS and so forth, and people really understood what's going on. They'd be freaking out, but they really don't. So it's really about gambling with other people's money, and how did this come? Well, you mentioned you grew up in New York. I don't know if your folks ever had like a regular pension plan, Steve, or your wife. But generally, the old days, people, all the risk was transferred onto the employer. Today, what has happened? All the risk has been transferred onto the employee or the participant, if you want to get technical about it. And most people don't know it. It's very much a sleight of hand transfer of wealth. And so what it's really made is it made these gazillionaires even much, much richer. And even since this whole coronavirus crisis, the billionaires have gotten much, much richer. And generally, this is all done with other people's money. And to me, it's a crime.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it is that something is, what was it that's changed over the past 50 years? When, you know, there was that so-called golden age where there was actually a middle class in this country, 1950s to maybe the mid-70s, perhaps 1980. What kind of rule changes came about that allowed this sleight of hand to take place? Was it rule changes or just cheating?
Well, really, it started during Reagan, the Reagan years, when Reagan and Reaganomics and Margaret Thatcher and the whole thing, you know, and that's when it started, and the deregulation of the banks. See, in 1933, they put in the Glass-Steagall Act, really to separate investment banking from traditional banking. In other words, traditional banking, Steve, is your, you know, you deposit your checking accounts, that type of savings type of thing. And then your investment banking, which is raising stock money for stocks and bonds, doing mergers and acquisitions and things like that, were separated in 1933 because the Procor Commission found that there was a collusion between these two things in National City, which is the precursor for Citibank. That this was a tremendous conflicts of interest. So what happened is in 1933 to 1960, really from 66 years to 1999, it was it worked pretty well. In other words, they separated traditional banking from investment banking. But with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act in 1999, which was essentially administered by Phil Graham, but signed by Bill Clinton, and essentially repealed this. And so people say, well, what's so bad about repeal Glass-Steagall Act? And I said, well, I'll give you three words: WorldCom, WorldCom, Enron, and Global Crossing. So here were three major companies, because Citigroup was lending monies as they're going to bankruptcy, and so a lot of the guardrails which were put in place, Steve, they really started around the Ronald Reagan time, but they deregulated the banks, and then it really kind of peaked in 1999, and it's gotten much worse since that time. But anyhow, people go to barryjamesdyke.com, they can get my books, and I go through the whole thing, how the deregulation of the banks.
And by the way, we do have this on our WikiPolitiki page for today's show. You can link to Barry's book. You know, this is, of course, really, really very sad that guardrail or wall between wild speculative investment with people who have the money to spare, and then this banking system that the rest of us rely on, where the boundaries were erased, and so tremendous amount of leveraging and over-leveraging and over-over-leveraging. It's like, you know, it's homeopathic economics. There's kind of like the slightest trace of value in there somewhere, and you get just kind of a little air and scent of it. And, of course, if anybody called in all the chips, there wouldn't be enough chips to cover very much.
Exactly.
So you've been watching this, and this has been your career. Has this been your career, your entire work life? Is this how you spend?
Well, you know, it was funny, you know, Steve. I always liked to write when I was a kid, and I wrote for the college newspaper and stuff like that. And actually, I was pretty good at it. And you know, you get in your way, and you know, I didn't think about it, but I was kind of desperate. I went through a really rough patch in my personal life. I had to reinvent myself, and I said, well, what can I do? And I said, well, maybe I can tell the people the truth. And because I intuitively understood it. And I guess it was partially selfish. I had to reinvent myself, but also I just wanted to know what people, what was really going on. And so the embedded corruption when it comes around to money, it's just incredible. And the thing is that most people don't understand, Steve. They're doing it with your money.
Well, you know, that's why you've come up with the Pirates of Manhattan too, Highway to Serfdom, and I mean that's a pretty you know, it's a pretty intense term, you know, but I think, and I think a lot of people are coming to the conclusion that the United States has been a third world country for a while now. And I don't think people recognize what it really means to have that very, very, very big gap between the very, very, very rich and the rest of us, the executive salaries and everybody else's. And this has been, you may or may not agree, this has been a propaganda campaign that's been going on ever since the Powell Memorandum, you know, where Lewis yeah. Powell, you know, warned the Chamber of Commerce that these regulators are coming for your profits, so you better get your propaganda machine working pretty quickly.
That is correct. That is correct. So I don't know if you've seen Noam Chomsky's The Requiem for American Dream, but that's Chomsky did it. Whoever the guys who put together that film did a brilliant job doing that. And yeah, so it's been a propaganda machine. And the funny thing is, well, Steve, is that it's and I would testify in court on this. I'm a political atheist at this point in my life, Steve, because I know too damn much. Okay,
yeah.
How both system works, So I'm just trying to help people, your listeners or my neighbors and friends like that. And if I can do it, that's great. The Powell, you know, you nailed it that with the Powell thing. And then it's gotten much worse since that time.
We're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back with Barry James Dyke talking about our financial past and financial future here on Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, hi, we're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest, Barry James Dyke. We're talking about the financial system and how ordinary Americans get hoodwinked by a bunch of winking hoods. Let's actually go a little bit deeper and look at the difference between the way all of these very high-paid executives and the people who are in the know, what do they know and where do they put their money and how do they invest in comparison to the poor folks who are just trying to create some money for their retirement?
Yeah, well, this is the kind of the aha moment. And so what I discovered, Steve, is like, say if I work for a Comcast Corporation, which is they own NBC Universal, whatever, or General Electric, or I work for Exxon Mobil, or if I work for even IBM now, some of these companies. So what I discovered, and this is, I researched it very deeply, is that while most people are thrown into these 401ks now, that the inside executives, and people can get my books, that's my last book, Guaranteed Income, is that so if they terminated the GE's pension plan in 2012 for the regular, not for the union, but for the regular salaried folks. But if I was Jeffrey Immelt, who essentially destroyed the company, which he did, that he walked out the door in 2017, Steve, with a annuity, a lifetime annuity of $84 million and a $25 million life insurance policy, and another sort of sundry. So what I discovered is that whereas if I'm a regular rank and file employee, I'm gambling with my 401k, but I'm an executive like Jeffrey Immelt from General Electric, I get a guaranteed pension for life. And as a financial advisor, I know it's the pension or guaranteed annuities. It's a much, much better deal than a 401k, which is essentially like playing pinball with your hands tied behind your back, you know. So I discovered this, and so obviously these guys make a lot of money, Steve, using stock options, restricted stock units, and other types of financial chicanery or sorcery, if you will. But the major discovery was is that that these major executives and all the banks do this stuff. Wells Fargo, Bank of America, anybody, they all do this for their high-end executives. And so, but when it comes to investing for regular people's money, they all say gamble with it. And it's total hypocrisy. But again, this has been building up since the 1980s with deregulation of banking. And then peaked in 1999, and ever since that time, it's been crazy. And you mentioned like the dot-com meltdown. Do you remember that, Steve?
I do. That's when I first moved to California, and everybody was telling me that Silicon Valley was just rich with venture capital, and the money spigot was turned on, and I should get involved with that, and blah blah blah.
Yeah. Well, this is the truth. Okay, so. If you can believe it, 75% of the companies that went public, in other words, they're brought in public markets, essentially sold into your mutual funds, okay? 75% of the companies that went public between 1999 and 2000 on the NASDAQ are no longer in existence.
Hmm.
It's very sobering. This is not my research of The Economist. So what you see is that they're using people's money through the 401k, things like that, and saying, what do we do? And so when you understand this stuff, and I will send you along my books, Steve, be happy as being a guest, that you find it's just gambling with other people's money.
Yeah. And here it was. I mean, now what happens? Let's say somebody had a 501k and they were circa 1999 or so, and whoever was managing those funds, I imagine, invested in these companies that were not even producing air. They weren't even producing air yet, right?
Pets.com and WebVan and all these things, yeah. No, silly stuff.
And so what happened to those funds, and were they – what happened to those funds, and then what happened to the people who thought they had something of value?
Well, a lot of them, the Wall Street has a lot. It's very they may not have their amoral type of profession, but they're also very slick, you know. So what they did, a lot of these things, when they have like a mutual fund which is performing horribly. So what they do, in order to bury their dead, okay, they would merge the fund into another fund, so it kind of disappear with a sleight of hand, or just terminate it altogether. But generally, what they would do is they would merge it, they would go out, they put it out of business, and no one even know. And you know, unless you're a guy like me who's a nerd who likes to figure out this stuff, you would never figure this stuff out. But you know. God gave me some type of a passion to tell people the truth about this stuff. They get this, Steve, 85 cents in every dollar in 1999, 85 cents in every dollar was going to technology mutual funds.
Ah.
And so it's just the same thing, and now it's just getting more sophisticated. Now they're going into target date funds, which is the subject of my second book, the Paris Manhattan 2 highway to serfdom.
Now, this is the same thing that happened with the mortgage, with these toxic mortgages that were expected to be absorbed by the regular system, right?
It's just they take ideas, Steve, which are essentially pretty good ideas, like diversification. I understand that. I get that. I understand modern portfolio theory. But the thing what they're doing is that if you diversify in crap, lots more crap. When you end up as crap,
a great variety of crap. We have not just regular crap. We've got a wide variety of crap you can choose from. You know, different colors, different smells, different flavors. You know, but they're all crap. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the subject of the movie The Big Short. You know, and
sure, yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah.
Which was a Michael Lewis writer, which I think Michael Lewis lives in the Bay Area, maybe in Berkeley. I think maybe. So what they're doing, if you take something which is really bad and diversify it, you're still going to have something really bad. So they're kind of using diversification, and they're using this now in the target date funds, and unfortunately it's gotten worse. But if people really want to take a deep dive, go to barryjamesdyke.com. And pick up the books. It'll be the best, $30 or $40 you ever spent.
Well, you know, this is, we're watching this unfold, and this has been going on now. As you say, 1999 was the marker after 66 years of having a wall between these two different kinds of banking. All of a sudden, during President Clinton's watch, that was done. And, in 2009, when Barack Obama took office, I know people and people from across the political spectrum, including conservatives, were expecting that Obama was going to do something to reform Wall Street, and it didn't happen. He certainly had the antagonism toward Wall Street on his side. He could have, certainly raised a righteous, as much righteousness as Donald Trump has been able to raise with his constituency, I'm sure that Obama could have gone even further. Why didn't it happen? Why was that opportunity missed, in your opinion?
Money. Money. And this is the whole thing. Is this, when you think about it, who was Barack Obama's chief economic advisor during his Obama's presidential years? It was Jeffrey Adnall.
Exactly.
I mean, which is
Summers and
Larry Summers. Okay, all these guys. I mean, these guys are made of
Jamie Dimon.
Jamie Dimon. Jeffrey Epstein. All these guys are connected. It's sad, but if anyone reads or you'll see it, so it's really about the money, and the whole thing is it's a club, Steve, and George. I remember you being a comedian. I mean, do you ever see the George Carlin clip about what's really going on? It's a club, and we're not in it, And,
exactly. They don't care about you. That one.
They don't.
I was thinking about that very thing. It's very harsh, and of course George Carlin's one of my favorites, but it's very harsh, and it's very true. And he says, don't imagine that they care about you. They are a club, and you're not in it. No. You're not invited to the party. You're not invited to join the club. And, it's very sad, of course. But, the people in this country obviously are, this is obviously intentional. So the question, there's really two questions, really. One is, that we're going to handle in this next half hour, and that is, what can individuals do? And then perhaps what could be done to reform the system? So let's look at, let's take somebody who actually is maybe in their 30s or 40s, and they're looking at, what can I do now to guarantee my income, risk-free guide to retirement? What can these people do to secure themselves in a system that's rigged, not in their favor?
Well, one of the things, this is true, Steve, and this is really weird, but I I've been very blessed to have some really brilliant mentors in my life, and Nelson Nash and Robert Castellone, and a bunch of economists now, by the way, have actually endorsed my work. But one of the things which I, this is kind of, it's kind of like back to the future. So one of the things which I discovered is using things like life insurance, first of all, to accumulate capital. And when you understand it, and I get it, okay, that you, you know, the first thing you need to do is save within an economy. And it depends upon, everyone's different, Steve, you know, whether it's a single or married, divorce, who knows, whatever. So each has to be, but one of the first things which I discovered is that one of the most important things is how you save within a society. And you need to save before you invest. Mm-hmm. The way it's, so one of the things, and you have to get this in my books, but so one of the safest places of for a person to save one's money is with a life insurance company, because legally and structurally they can't be levered institutions like the banks are. Now, what do I mean by that? Now, if you say put $10,000 in your local bank, Steve, or credit union, okay. Do you know how much you can, how much these banks can create money out of thin air? So you put $10,000 in a local bank. How much can they lend out to the public, Steve?
Well, I imagine it's about 10 times that much.
Yeah, but 10 times. Very good. You're very good. But it's actually, but as of last fall, you know what? It's unlimited. So if you put $10,000 in your local bank, okay, they can essentially lend it out to the heavens. So the banks, by very nature, are very, very unstable, Steve, because they're very levered. Okay, you get it. Mm-hmm. But if I deposit my money into an insurance company, and I'm a snob because I like mutually owned companies which are not owned by stockholders.
Sure,
You know, I like the mutual owner form of ownership. Is that if I put $10,000 into that company, they will lend money out to investors and whatever. But it's very, very, they're very, very strict, and the portfolios have to be managed. So, but they can't lend out. They can't lever their portfolio. So what you find is that, so one of the first things really, it takes a process is that you really have to educate people how to, you know, to work. But if you do that and you start accumulating capital, you'll learn how to cut out banks and recapture the interest and learn how to finance your own cars and so forth. So that's kind of a step, first step. And then, you know, and obviously invest in yourself. You know, Ben Franklin said the best investment's always going to be in education or your, you know, interest, your best interest is always going to be in yourself. And stop looking for the, the Robin Hood mentality, which we're seeing today. It's really kind of corny and really kind of old fashioned, but it works. And a lot of these young people haven't seen, I don't know what how old you are, Steve. I'm 66, but I've seen 97. I was there 97. I was there for the dot-com meltdown. I was 2007. Mm-hmm. I've seen all these booms and busts, and there will be. So one of the first things really to do is just to learn how to save and discipline yourself to save, generally 15 to 20% of your net annual savings. So that's the first step. Did that make sense?
Absolutely, because, you know, and again, these life insurance policies are very, you know, that's been a very stable way to invest. And you can, of course, you know, you can borrow off of that. There's other things you can do with those policies, right?
Yeah. It's awful. But this is anyhow what started my research, Steve, is that, and I go back to thanking this this black lady down in the FDIC in Washington. She was very, very kind. But I discovered this is where all the banks put their money. And this is, you know, even the Federal Reserve itself had, you know, 75% of its own capital invested, you know, in annuities with life insurance companies. So here's the nation's central bank telling everyone to gamble in the market when they themselves had their own money with life insurance companies. You couldn't make this stuff up. And I have the audit from Deloitte or whatever. But anyway, so
Deloitte and Touche.
So the first thing, Deloitte too. So I actually have the actual audit. You can't find it anymore. Thank God I saved it. But so that's the first thing really, and really to help people, you know, learn how to and also learn how to manage debt, because this is the new slavery, Steve.
This is
the new slavery, whether it be credit cards or mortgages or student debt. And so you really have to really, you know, stay out of debt. And this is how they want to get you. And people that don't make wages. You mentioned about people, inequality. So people don't have enough money. I don't know. I don't know how anyone can afford to go to these colleges now. I mean, you're in the Bay Area. Which Stanford's near you? Am I correct? Somewhat near you?
Yeah. Stanford's in Palo Alto. We're at University of California in Berkeley, which is a state school. Stanford. You know, I went to Brooklyn College in New York when it was free. The City University was free. And because of where I grew up, I didn't grow up on Park Avenue. I grew up on Park Place, Avenue in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And were it not for that opportunity to go to school for basically student fee of $20 or $30 a semester, it would have been very challenging for me to get my college education. And then, of course, the other thing is that debt is totally different than it was. You know that if you watch the classic movie, It's a Wonderful Life, right? You know, and
yes,
there's the SNL with everybody's little life savings there, and somebody cares about them. And instead of banks loaning money to local businesses, people are expected to finance their own business with just credit cards.
Yeah, at 18%, or 18 average of credit cards, 18%. You know what the maximum? This is where I researched this too, Steve. You know, 4 or 5,000 years ago, Mesopotamia, they actually had limits on what they could charge for interest. You know, they're talking, centuries ago, 4,000 years ago. Mesopotamia, they only charged 10. If you paid your interest in like silver, it was like 10 or 12%. Or if you paid your interest in barley, it was limited to 30%. You know what the maximum interest rate you can charge on a loan in this country is today, Steve?
How much?
There is no maximum.
There is no maximum.
So you get these giant banks like Shank of America. I call them Shank of America. one of the huge honeypots of or Wells fraud or whatever these banks. Okay, one of the huge honeypots of profits are actually essentially a credit card debt.
And, sure.
They love to. They love to get people indebted, and this is how they're making people slaves.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Barry Dyke to learn a little bit more about what you can do about your own financial new word situation. We'll be back shortly.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hi, we're back on WikiPolitiki with our guest Barry Dyke, and we're talking about financial guaranteed financial income in your later years, in your what I would call reclining years, and you can actually recline and relax, and how things have been abused. You know, funny you mentioned the Mesopotamia, because you know, back in the biblical times, they talked about the Jubilee, and the Jubilee was
designed
to
get it.
forgive debt, because you understand that debt is slavery. And the company store is different than it was back 100 or 150 years ago when workers basically had to get their pay and buy everything at the company store. The company store is, looks like some of the organizations you mentioned earlier. You know, we banked with Chase until they chased us, and now we're happy to be with a credit union. And, you know, again, the human element simply doesn't exist. When our other bank, we were at Washington Mutual, which is not a big bank, but when it was taken over by Chase, the people that I knew and loved there left. They recognized that, you know, that the predator had really taken over. And, you know, so let's talk about two things here. I want to reiterate your advice to people to investigate some of these other instruments that are available through life insurance and so on. And again, I'll say that on the Wiki Politiki page at Om Times Radio and on my Wiki Politiki website, we have a link to Barry's website. You can find out more about all three and of his books and a new one that's about to pop out. Let's talk now about if you had a megaphone and you had a way to speak to millions of people at one time, and you had the proverbial magic wand, what kinds of changes would you make? What kinds of reforms would you make to even the playing field, or even, you know, put us all on a different playing field?
Wow, that's a great question, Steve. That's a really great question. Well, you know, I'm a Christian, so but I think it's really everyone's answered to a higher power. So first thing I would say would be getting God into your life. And I have fans, believe I have Jewish fans, Muslim fans, the whole thing. So first thing I would say, you know, get right with God, whatever. Get spiritually grounded. You know, all that stuff which we learn, which is really important. So I think it's really the spiritual. I call it my 5S. I think my 5S, Steve, are faith. Faith is the most important thing in my life. The second thing is my family. The third thing is my friends. The fourth thing is physical fitness, or, you know, actually exercising, all that stuff, you know. And the last one is finances. So those are our priorities. From a priority perspective, I kind of recommend my 5S to people. But I think really just helping your neighbor whenever, just, you know, some of these things, which, because there's so much, you know, yesterday I just, you know, I've worked with the mentally ill people for years, number of years. And, you know, I just, some of the people, you know, I was helping a guy yesterday, and it's just, you got to be so grateful when you help someone who has less than you. And so the first thing I would recommend is help someone other than yourself. Does that sound corny? I don't know. So get out of yourself, because we all have a lot to be grateful for. This is still a great country. And I just tell the truth a lot of this stuff. And don't listen to the mainstream media.
About anything? No, hardly.
No, but I mean, a lot of it.
You can believe the baseball scores, I think. I think you can believe the baseball scores. That's why I read them first thing in the morning, to get some truth. What you said is so important, because I think that the reason why money has become the ruler in this country is that because there is something missing at the sacred center. You know, Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple. And the money changers are everywhere, and there is no temple. And it's not about religion, as you know. I mean, you're not talking about religion. You're talking about our personal connection with something that's bigger than we are. And that's simultaneously humbling, but also elevating, because you recognize that there's bigger purpose in life than just looking out for yourself. And you know, in our time, in our adult life, you know, the past 40 or 50 years, you know, it's been about the me generation. It's been about getting for yourself and don't be a sucker, you know, and there's a lot of that stuff, you know. I mean, a friend of mine was offered a job working for an unscrupulous company. You know, we could talk about Enron and other companies. And she turned the job down. And her colleague said, don't be an idiot. You know, somebody else is going to take that job. If you don't, take advantage of it. And so people have been in, sounds kind of funny, but they've been shamed into being unscrupulous and to going along with unscrupulous things. And, you know, people that work at these institutions, everybody who worked at Enron was an sociopath.
Exactly.
But it was a sociopathic entity. So what you're saying is that for individuals to find something that has fundamental meaning, I love those Fs, because I call it fiscal fitness, you know, not just physical fitness, but fiscal fitness. That's your financial, your last one. And, you know, and I think that, you know, and then also noting the advice of not doing what they're telling you to do, but doing what they themselves do on their own. Anything that, if you were to recommend a reform to the actual system, what might that be?
Well, probably simple, and you know, I'd like to. I think you've had Ellen Brown on your show before. Am I correct?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Yeah, and she's a great lady, and I'd like to.
I totally
her,
admire
by the
her.
Way. I really want to interview her. But one of the first things I would do would probably I would bring back Glass-Steagall Act, separate traditional deposit-based lending and investment banking. It worked well for 66 years. Ever since Clinton pushed that through in 99, all hell is broken loose. So the first thing, you know, this is for starts, and really do, because that would be really, and that, you know, and but this is, so that would be the one thing I would do. You know, and also just to realize that, you know, capitalism, you know, you have many stakeholders. And another thing, whole Milton Friedman's, you know, everything about shareholder value. I mean, so, I don't know, I would say stakeholder, whatever. It just, it's kind of idealistic. Capitalism is better than communism, but today what we have, Steve, it's not capitalism. It's crony capitalism or plutocracy or whatever you want to call it. But you know, the first thing I would do probably is, you know, separate traditional banking from investment banking. And that'd be one start. Yeah, I would do.
You know, back in the 30s, there was an agrarian economist, the conservative agrarian economist named Carl Wilken. He was the inventor of parity farming, parity economics. It wasn't paying people to not grow, but setting a standard for prices. So if farmers produced, if they overproduced, they knew that that wouldn't destroy them, that there was a parity price below which you couldn't go. And what he figured, this was in the 1930s, doing his mathematical research, he found that in those days, the national income was seven times the farm income. And so in 1929, before the Depression, and 1933 afterward, the farmers produced roughly the same amount of food, but the farm income in 1933 was half of what it was, even though they were producing the same amount of food. So at that point, Wilken said there's three kinds of capitalism. He says there's state capitalism, which, you know, in those days was Nazism and Soviet communism. There's corporate capitalism, which is what we have now, the casino economy. And then there's what he called people's capitalism. And people's capitalism is really the exchange of value in a marketplace, where the value is not leveraged, but actually it is what it is, and people gladly pay for valuable things. And there's not this need to leverage and leverage and leverage and over leverage, and create this metastatic debt, which is the slavery that you're talking about. So I think part of it has to do with, as you said initially, a shift in attitude to where you put your spiritual connection first. It doesn't, you know, I understand that you are not laying out some religious dogmatic prescription, but simply saying that this has been such a glaring missing piece in our public life that the power of money and the power of materialism and accumulating things has become so much more important, and people have become more unhappy and miserable.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, I like nice stuff. Don't get me wrong. I've had no money, and I've had some money, you know. And it's always better to have a little more, but the whole thing, it can't be the end all. I mean, it's just like, how many houses can you live in? How many cars can you drive? I mean, it's just, and when people's wealth goes up exponentially, it doesn't mean they're going to be buying more suits or meals or things like that. So I would agree with you 300%, Steve, about this. But people, you know, you're out in Silicon Valley. I'm out here in the East, and people say, "Why don't you get in venture capital and all that stuff?" And it's gambling with other people's money. And it's not doing the right thing. It's not sexy, but I sleep at night. I like doing that, Steve.
You know, earlier on, it might have been before the show, you were talking about people you've interviewed, John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah.
And in a certain regard, when you look at his experience working in third world countries on behalf of the World Bank, you know, back in let's say the 1970s and 1980s, what's going on here, you know, essentially the exploitation of people, ruthless exploitation, it doesn't seem a whole lot different than what was going on in these third world countries. Am I making that?
Well, no, you're spot on, man. You're spot on. We are becoming a banana republic. When you look at the OECD, Office of Economic Cooperation and Development out of Paris, whatever, it's pretty good independent research. When you look at just like in things like time off and things like that, I mean, Mexico is better than the United States at this point. in terms of paid time off, you know, so. Yeah. So we are becoming a banana republic, I hate to say it, but from an economic perspective, I mean, believe me, I was watching something on Netflix the other night about people in Bangladesh, whatever, you know, it's like, thank you God, we don't have anything like that here, but in many respects, we are becoming a third world, when you look at who's that guy, Robert Reich? Okay, I think he teaches.
Robert Reich, he's a local guy here in Berkeley. Yes, yes.
If you know him, I'd love to interview him. By the way, but you know, but the inequality now, 40% of the population, Steve, can't afford $400 for like an anticipated expense, and this is the Federal Reserve data, not mine. So,
and that was last year, before what we have right now. Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So unfortunately, with all this money printing, whatever, it's going to benefit the really, really wealthy. But it's, you know, what's $1,200 now, Steve? I mean, I'm in New Hampshire. I don't know what can you get for $1,200 in Berkeley?
You can get $1,100. That's what you can get for $1,200.
You know, I mean, what are you going to get out here? A couple of weeks of groceries, you know, if your family. So we have, unfortunately, we have become that. I mean, and we have there's no safety nets. I think California, it depends upon state by state, but a lot of the things is that we just don't have the safety nets. Even remember, you grew up in New York, I grew up in Massachusetts, so they're just. A lot of the things have been gutted, and retirement security is such a huge thing, okay? And people are much worse off than they were than when President Truman was president. But the problem today, Steve, is that the amount of debt that people are shouldering, and the student loans and parent plus loans and all that stuff. So, and there's a lot, you know, hay that has to be people have to speak about. And so you're very familiar with these topics.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about medical debt. One of my guests that I had last year was actually worked with a company that that actually helps people pay off. It pays their medical debt for them. It buys medical debt for a dollar, for 10 cents on a dollar or less, and then it uses that money to pay off. They've paid off huge amounts of medical debt. But that shouldn't be necessary in a society that claims to be one of the most prosperous societies in the world. So I certainly appreciate everything that you're doing. I'm going to highly recommend that people get your work. We haven't had a chance to talk about your third Pirates of Manhattan 3, Mercenaries of Debt. But I urge you to go check out Barry, Barry's website, Barry James Drake. And I thank you so much, Barry, for being our guest on WikiPolitiki.
Thank you, Stephen. God bless you, and keep pushing back the frontiers of ignorance.
Thank you. Thank you, Barry. This is Steve Behrman. We'll be back with WikiPolitiki next week.